Where exactly were we when it cut off?
I forget. That was messed up. I apologize, everybody. That was my computer crashed. I think it's because my studio is so hot, probably overheated or something like that. It just like froze and then, you know, had like a blue screen, then went black and then turned off. And I was like, oh, crap. So I don't know. So it doesn't matter. Let's get back on track here. What were we talking about? We're talking about henotheism and stuff like that.
You asked me why polytheism over henotheism.
That's right.
More or less. I was just saying that, you know, I don't know exactly how much it was caught before it crashed, but I was basically just saying that I think it's more accurately reflects the complexity of the world. When we look at all of our, you know, we look at any model we have or theory, whether it's scientific, philosophy, etc., basically it's trying to make, you know, a rational, comprehensible, human-sized model of a complex world that has more forces acting than we are even capable of comprehending.
Yeah.
So if we understand that the world is super complex and that there's all kinds of different forces acting, it makes sense to apply that to our religious practice and our worldview and our spirituality. And to realize that different gods have different strengths, different gods have different weaknesses as well, obviously, but, you know, they have different abilities to help you or act in different spheres of life. So it makes sense to sacrifice to different gods at different times of the year, different festivals, and to pray to different gods.
Now, one thing that you touched on there that I think is kind of important is you mentioned how it more accurately reflects the complexity of reality, the complexity of the universe. How do you think that it influences us in a way that our worldview then becomes different than some of these other systems?
Well, like I was saying, you know, it's pretty different to have different areas of your life or different problems and realize that different gods are who you're going to pray to instead of a henotheistic or furthermore into monotheism and just, okay, this is the god that I always pray to. I'm going to pray to him for this, that, or the other.
Very cool. So one of the most complex things that goes on with understanding the universe and one of the most complex and vast topics, whether you're talking about philosophy or spiritual philosophy, spirituality, or you're talking about science, that's time. That's something that you wanted to talk about tonight. So when it comes to time, like, we don't understand crap about time. We understand that, you know, what do they always say? They say, like, we don't see time. We only see the effects of time. We only perceive time. You know, time is not linear and all of this stuff. But what does this all really mean, Griff?
Well, I mean, it means a lot of things, but obviously, when you consider what defines a worldview and what defines how you see the world every day and how your philosophy or your religion works, your conception of time is one of the most fundamental things about it beyond, you know, who you worship and things like that.
Sure.
Just in terms of how you look at, you know, even how you approach a day or how you approach a month, how you look at your life, how you look at yourself and regarding ancestors or your place in time, your place in history, all of this comes back to how exactly do you view time?
Yeah, completely, completely. And this is more of a simplistic way of looking at it, but I had a conversation with a fella earlier today, and we were talking about how, you know, I'm not going to get too political here, but we were talking about how, you know, the vampires that run the world, how they really bank on and they cash in on the short memory of the average population, and how since we've been cut from, you know, our greater polytheistic worldview, it's become easier because people only really see things within the time span of their life. Like, for, you know, we were sitting there talking, I pointed across the street, and there's like an old guy mowing his lawn, looked like he was in his 60s or whatever. And I'm like, this guy, he thinks that he knows life. He thinks that he's lived a long time. You know, things have been a certain way for a very long time because he's been on this earth for so long. And that affects his worldview. When in actuality, his sample size of existence of life is just a grain of sand in this gigantic, you know, timeline that is, you know, us. So that really affects that. Now, if he had a completely different worldview, like how our ancestors did, that he, you know, say, even if you just like the idea of inheriting a trade, you know, you did the trade of your father, who did the trade of his father, who did the trade of his father's 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 father, and so on and so forth. Because of that, you had a much greater understanding of time. You had a much, you know, larger timeline that you were looking at in your perception of reality. This guy here, you know, his dad was a, I don't know, his dad was a carpenter. Now he works for a union at the factory. And, you know, he's just completely cut. So all of the wisdom and knowledge of his dad was kind of just like, you know, cast into the river. And now he thinks that his little time span, his little timeline is, you know, is like all of existence. You know, well, it's always been like this, blah, 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 blah. That's kind of created like a very small sample size that results in kind of poisoning modern people's worldview. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree with it. And I would tie it back to something we were talking about before we went live, where I was saying that if you look back at the traditional Germanic worldview, it's very focused on the past and continuity and things developing and growing from the past with things like the Well of Urth and so on, which we can get into. But at the moment, I want to focus on comparing that to the type of worldview that you were looking at, which is, as you said, it's a shorter time span. But I think that really grows from constantly looking at the future rather than the past. You know, if you're always looking at the future and seeing that things are better and onward and there's no reason to care about the past or skills that your father, your grandfather, your great-grandparents knew, you know, if you don't value Othel, you don't value inheritance of knowledge or property or things, or, you know, people today will inherit their parents' home and look at, okay, now we need to turn around and flip it on the real estate market. Yep. No one ever thinks of moving into it, and the parents don't either. You know, they probably leave it in three equal parts if they have three kids. So there's no concept of that kind of continuity of things developing and growing from the past and building something larger with more continuity, with more rootedness. And really, as you said, the vampires that rule us, that's exactly what they want. They want rootless people that are focused on, you know, the next iPhone coming out. They're focused on, you know, whatever the latest scientific discovery is, rather than traditional knowledge, traditional inheritance, traditional skills.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned the Othel, or Othel, as the people of anglicized tongue would say. The Othel is something that's completely gone on us. And I had a video on my channel a while back about, well, I guess it wasn't a while back. I came back from vacation and I gave the description of my vacation. I went and I had a vacation. We went camping on an Indian reservation. And I got to talk with some of the people that lived there and stuff. And I was talking to an old woman there who was, you know, 90-something years old. She's the oldest member of their Indian tribe. And I was like, she told me, oh, well, I inherited this property from my mother. And I was like, oh, well, really? When, where'd she, how'd she inherit it from? And she goes, well, she inherited it from her great aunt, who inherited it from her great grandfather. And I was like, that's going pretty far. But how long has your family been here on this property? And then she like looked at me like I had two heads. Like, what do you mean, how long we've been here on this? We've always been here. And she started told me a story about how she was a little girl and she went down. She pointed at the place that she used to go down with her walking stick to go kill snakes. And she's like, oh, yeah, my grandmother took me down there and taught me how to go kill snakes. I was like, how many generations have you people been going down to this little corner where the snakes come out to kill them with your walking sticks? Even though that's kind of like a very small, you know, simplistic sample of what I'm talking about, these people had this generational, transgenerational tie to this land. And, you know, speaking of that, I had a friend that just got back. They went to Greece on vacation. They actually went to Crete, more specifically. And they were talking about, you know, some of the people there that lived there on Crete have, you know, I don't know if they're orchards or whatever, but they had these, like, olive trees that were there. And these olive trees, because of how they grow, they never really die. So you have these families that own this property harvesting these olive trees that are like 1,000 years old. You know, at some point, you like, when does the olive tree begin to evolve and create like a symbiotic relationship with the people that harvest it? You know, there's 1,000 years to be harvesting the same people harvesting. That's a really powerful spiritual thing to be that connected to the land. That is long, long gone. You know, today in modern society and, you know, modern capitalist, socialist, materialist, scumbag, husk, you know, anus worshiping culture, that's completely gone. You don't learn the trade of your father. You don't inherit the property from your parents. You know, I was just talking to, there's a young girl I was talking to sort of recently. Her family owns a funeral parlor in her town. And she's like, oh, I can't wait till my dad gives it to me so I can liquidate it. And I'm thinking, it's like, when did your family open this funeral parlor? She says, well, my, you know, great-great-grandfather opened it in, you know, 1800-something or whatever. And I was like, so 4 generations, you people have been providing this thing to the community, and you're just going to liquidate it for what? I was like, what are you going to do with the money? She's like, oh, I'm going to pay off my student debt. I was like, what'd you go to school for? She said, oh, I'm going to be a psychologist. So you're literally going to learn psychology and rob the community of this crucial practice. You know, probably the most crucial practice, you know, helping people bury their dead and like liquidating something that your family has spent many generations building up. I was trying to explain to her like the concept of ODL without saying ODL, because I know her eyes would roll up into her head and she wouldn't understand what I'm talking about. So I tried to explain it to her. It was like talking to a deaf person. She had no concept of it, didn't have any importance to her. What was important to her was liquidating her dad's, her family's, her great-great-grandfather's business and, you know, just throwing it away. She's like, oh, and then I want to travel. It's like, why? So you could go, like, you know, blow the bartender at Sandals? You know, like, what are you going to do? Like, I guess I should. That was a little vulgar for this program. But you guys know what I'm talking about. Like, why? So you could just go see a bunch of tourist traps and go get a useless degree? You're going to get rid of something that's been so, you know, endlessly precious? Let me tell you something. Coming from a family, I mean, I come from, you know, a broken home. Like, I come from, you know, I had a single mom. My parents got divorced. A lot of my family split up. I didn't inherit anything. I didn't have, you know, nothing. So when I hear people that do have this gift of ODL and they're so willing to like throw it away, I want to choke them.
Well, that was absolutely spot on. Don't know exactly what to add to it, but I will say that. Well, no, I will say that, you know, there's things you say that having a family business like that, as you've said, especially something that provides a vital service to a real community and has some actual roots in a place that a family has built for generations, and to look at it just as, hey, this is something I can liquidate into cash to spend on travel, which, you know, I don't want to completely hate on the idea of travel. Obviously, our ancestors also traveled and went places for various, you know, whether to trade, to explore, to discover, to build, to conquer. But this modern idea of travel as a complete consumptive consumer thing, you know, as you said, to interact with, say, the Sandals bartender, or furthermore, to just take a bunch of pictures and put them on Instagram or Facebook and show, hey, look, this is where I went. Shouldn't you all be so excited for me? You know, it becomes this very status signaling thing, the same way as buying some expensive purse or shoes, or for a guy, I guess, belt or hat or clothes, etc. Or the latest car, I guess.
Now, I know I went on a big tirade there about it, but it's like, it's such a precious, wonderful thing. And when you can become like when you're a spiritually aware person and you start practicing Asatru and you start learning about the ancestral spiritual philosophy.
I don't mean to be too interrupted, I wanted to add something else to the just general idea of ODL, that, you know, even beyond material inheritance and, as you said, skills for, you know, an actual career, to be a carpenter or whatever that your father was and learn a real trade. But even beyond that, just basic skills of, you know, how to fix things, how to build things, how to garden, things like that were skills that, you know, everyone had 100 years ago. Yeah. And that, you know, as the generations have gone since then, have fallen away. And people just don't teach their children it. You know, you look at the average millennial, and they probably don't even own a set of tools, much less know how to use them to fix anything. And beyond that, I was going to also add that when we think of Odal, we need to also look at it even in terms of things like what you name your children. And this is something that the boomers really dropped the ball on, I think, at least in my experience personally, and just other people I know with boomer parents and other family and friends, that you would have all of these names that have gone down for at least three or four generations, or perhaps even longer, and then they just pick a name out of a fucking baby name book.
Oh, yeah. You'll have, like, somebody that's like, William Schuler the sixth, or, like, something like that, and then he'll name his kid Jaden. It's like, are you crazy? Yeah, actually happened in my family. My grandfather was like the third or the fourth or something like that. My grandfather, his name was, I don't want to say his name because I don't want to, you know, dox myself, take power. But he named his, you know, that was his name. And that was like his great-great-grandfather's name. And then he named his son that, my uncle. And then my uncle, you know, named his kid that. My cousin named his kid like the same thing, but stupid. Okay, so I'll tell you what. In short, the name is I don't want to, actually, I don't want to say, because I don't want people, you know, tracking me down or nothing. But it is like, dude, like, you literally took, you're like the sixth or the seventh or something. It's like this name that's like, it's like odalistic, and you just like, you know, like, just like gave this kid something stupid. It's like, little poor bastard. And then he named his kid back to the original name and had to start all over again. But it's like, still, what kind of jerk off? Like, what is wrong with you? You have you're that much of a cool guy. You worship yourself that much that you can stop something that has been going on for generations. You've broken that tradition just for the hell of it. Why? And it wasn't even a good change. It was something. It was just like dumb white trash goofy name. So it's like, why would you do that? And I think another thing that's, speaking of Odal, that's important is skills. Not just like just basic skills, like we're talking like fixing things and stuff like that, but like talents. Like, I play music. You know, well, I used to. I don't really do it as much anymore, but I have the ability to play music. I still play. You know, I still have my guitar. I sing a little bit. You know, I love music. I still do music a little bit. Man, music was like my great. My grandfather was a musician. All my great aunts were wedding singers. Their grandparents, their family were all singers and musicians. And it goes on for years and years and years and years. So I was like, I'm going to teach my son that. That's Odal. You know, it could be something that you do. Like, one of the traditions that my family does is on Christmas Eve, and I've transferred this over to Yule, is we make fried dough. It's like you just get bread dough, and you pat it into these little patties, and you fry it in oil, and it's awesome. And you dip it in your gravy or your, you know, whatever. And then the next day you have the leftovers, you put maple syrup on it. It's like a nice little tradition. That's an Odal. Even if it's something small, it's something that gets carried on and on and on. When I take a bite of that, it's like really special. Even though it's just some bread dough, half the time we just buy frozen dough from the store and we just like thaw it out and fry it. But it's, when I take a bite of that and I dip it in the sauce, I take a bite. That's something that my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather did. So it's like this really special kind of little thing. You know, there's a time where every little thing we did was Odal. Not just our attachment to land, but our attachment to skills, our attachment to talents, our attachment to traditions, our attachment to names, our attachment to language. All of this stuff was vastly transgenerational, and just got cut off and thrown in the garbage, and now we just make stuff up. And then we wonder why people are so lost and broken.
Well, one thing I'll say is you should try making your fried dough in lard. That would actually be very Odal. I used to cook everything with lard.
Yeah, but they used to do it in olive oil.
Yeah, all right. I guess that makes sense with an Italian tradition. Anyhow, actually, that reminded me, going back to what you mentioned about Crete with 1,000-year-old olive trees, I actually read something about an area of Italy. I don't recall exactly where it was, but they were literally the vampires, as you call them, made a program that they were incentivizing people to tear up 1,000-year-old olive trees to raise fucking mangoes in Italy.
What?
Swear. It's absolutely something true.
I need a soundboard with like some screaming so we can bog these people.
Yeah, I mean, how much more can you get to the idea of not understanding the importance of continuity from the past, tradition, or even just the idea of understanding like rootedness in time and place, and the fact that, yeah, olives are what you grow in the Mediterranean, not fucking mangoes.
Mangoes?
Yes.
Oh. Oh my God, that's, oh. I'm like mad. I mean, I'm physically mad right now.
I mean, I'm not Italian. It didn't make me mad, but it did make me just disgusted. I was literally disgusted when I read it.
Like, what a bunch of finooks.
I don't know what a finook is.
Yeah, don't worry, it's a bad word. I can't tell you all that. I'll tell you after we shut down the stream.
All right. No, I was also going to say that as we were talking about, just to have skills and recipes and things, I mean, people tend to get some amount of recipes, but to actually, as you said, have like a unbroken tradition for generations of what you cook on a specific day or things like that, I think that's really been lost in most ethnic groups, at least in places like America, and probably, I would say, urbanized groups in a lot of other countries as well.
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. It's literally just the robbing people of their humanity. It's like literally that is what makes us human. That is what made humans different. I mean, now we're literally just apes. We're apes with smartphones. It's gross. It's real gross. But anyway, speaking of apes with smartphones, we had one more topic that we wanted to kind of touch on a little bit. And this is a doozy, and this isn't really something you're going to hear a lot of, you know, folkish people talking about, but this is something that's a big area of my interest and actually an area of Mr. Griff's interest, and he's very against it, and I'm sort of in a gray area, and I want to discuss it. But before I get started, everybody make sure you like, subscribe here to Rauffenvolk. Rauffenvolk is so absolutely great. I love this network. I've been a part of a lot of networks. You know, this is a growing network. It's not that big yet, but this is the best one I've ever been a part of. You got me here on the bog with Mr. Griff. You got Rory on the Folkstead. You got the wonderful Miss Mother Hen on Hen House. And then, you know, you can't forget, you got the mighty Mr. Stephen McNallan on God's Folk and Destiny. And then you also, we have so many other wonderful people. Miss Barbie Chan does crafting and cooking videos. You got Kaiser Cooks is over here now. Now everybody loves Kaiser Cooks. Press 9 in the chat to hail Kaiser. That's my boy. I love that guy. Really brilliant, talented guy, funny guy. So, but you know, let's talk about this topic that I'm talking about, and that is transhumanism. We're gonna do our best to put it through a folkish lens, and how is it, you know, going to benefit the folk, and how can we maintain? I have my own cockamamie. I don't think it's cockamamie. I think I'm, you know, right. My own theory called Fabian folk futurism that I talk about. So, Mr. Griff, what is your issue with transhumanism? And well, first, let's lay down a definition. To you, what is transhumanism, and what is the direction of transhumanism we're going to go into?
I would say that transhumanism is utilizing technology to fundamentally change and alter what humans are or how they function. To really make it very simple.
So what direction do you think we're going to go into? You think it's going to be gene editing? Do you think it's going to be augmentation? Do you think it's going to be artificial intelligence? Like, where do you think we're going to go with it?
I actually don't think any of those are going to work out. I think they're all cockamamie schemes made by people who don't understand how complex all of those things are. Frankly, I think that it's largely a case comparable to, say, Frankenstein's monster, that, you know, when you're going to look at things like gene editing, you're fucking with something that is more complex than the most brilliant people even can understand.
Yeah. Yo, but whether or not you think it's cockamamie, it's already here.
I mean, yeah, it is in some real sense. As you said, to be an ape with a smartphone, yeah, even what we're doing now is some extent transhuman. You know, we're having a conversation across the internet, and people anywhere can watch us, and this is, you know, it's a very different method of social interaction than humans evolved for, than we were looking at in the past, and then our ancestors would understand at all, really.
Yeah, You know, you just said something there that, like, really tickled my pickle there. That was, you mentioned that we're already in it. This is something that I say that people are like, they kind of like, you know, they're like, oh, we are already in singularity. It's just a very archaic, primitive form of it. Your social media is singularity. You are already on the same wavelength as everybody else artificially. You know, the correct singularity is the full consciousness. The artificial, the vampiric wolf age version of full consciousness is singularity. You're already in it. With Facebook, with Twitter, with Gab, with Telegram, with Discord, with YouTube, well, even, live streams, all of this.
Well, even when you look at, they've done studies and looked at things like how it changes people that, you know, people that learn to rely on things like, say, Google Maps to get anywhere. Like, literally the part of your brain that does things like orient yourself and has spatial mapping and sense of direction and stuff, it literally basically just withers away. So you look at the way that people use smartphones, use computers, we use all of this and sort of depend on it as an external memory, depend on a lot of people, as I said, for navigation, direction to get anywhere. You depend on it for talking to people, et cetera. This does fundamentally change your brain and fundamentally changes how you are and what you are as a human.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody's ever read The Selfish Gene, that's 100% your body. Genetics, period, will eliminate anything that's not necessary. That's how it works. And when you, and I'm guilty of it too, man. I Google map places that I've been to, you know, 40 times because I can't remember. You know, well, obviously, I've always been bad with directions, but there are people that they've just eliminated it from their skill set with Google Maps. Same thing with social media. You find that your social skills in real life get depleted. You know, so it's like people say, "Well, you hate it so bad. Why are you out here live streaming?" Well, we're hacking into the Matrix to save everybody. So
well, we also just need to face the time and place that we live in. We can't be living off in some ideal that and not facing the situation we have to deal with.
I like the idea of being sci-fi heroes a little better. So, yeah. Now, when it comes to transhumanism, there are a few different camps of what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, augmentation, which is here. You know, we're gonna be uploading storage into our brains, and you know, it augmenting and improving, doing upgrades on our bodies and our minds physically. There's singularity, which is the scariest one. Which is, I don't know about the scariest one, but it's one of the scariest ones where everybody's consciousness exists on the same wavelength, which is, you know, you're already participating in. So it's like you're already, it's already normalized. So the next step happens, you know, you better believe that it's not going to be that alien to you. The next one after that is probably gene editing. Gene editing is absolutely terrifying because, speaking of selfish gene, if you know, like, whenever a species or an organism has an advantage, it wipes out all the other organisms. That's how it works. So what they're doing now is they're editing out people that have, they're editing out the gene that lets people get HIV. So they're literally creating HIV immune people to go, like, you know, have an advantage. Next, they're going to start, you know, and say, oh, we're going to edit out spina bifida. We're going to edit out autism. We're going to edit out Down syndrome. We're going to edit out all of these things. And people are going to be like, oh, yeah, but I want that edited out. And they're going to go for it. And then the next step after that is designer babies. They say, oh, I want my baby to have blue eyes. Oh, I want my baby to have blonde hair. Oh, I want my baby to be white. Oh, I want my baby to be black. Oh, I want my baby to be green. Or I want my baby to be this or this or that. Blah, blah, blah. I want my baby to be 7 feet tall. I want my baby to have 160 IQ. And eventually, people that don't have the money or the means to do so are going to eventually end up being this genetic subclass. You know, that they're going to be this genetic subclass of people that can't compete in any way, shape, or form. We're going to have to be competing with these genetically modified superhumans. And by people that can't afford it, I mean everybody listening. Everybody listening. They are not going to let it become affordable. There's no way the household that makes 100 grand a year, the household that makes 50 grand a year, or the household that makes 30 grand a year is going to be able to afford to genetically alter their babies. It is going to be reserved only for, grillionaires.
Well, my perspective on that is really that I think that the gene editing really will end up being a double-edged sword that will probably backfire more than it actually helps, for one thing. As I said before, you're looking at something that's super complex. If you actually look into and learn things about genetics, there are things about the way that different genes and different segments that are not specifically genes, that are non-encoding areas of the genome, change the way that the DNA folds, and it changes, which changes the gene expression, which changes different things. It's a super complex system that has all these different interdependencies that, you maybe fire in a new gene or a different allele and you can change something specific that you want, but that's going to have probably at least 10 unintended consequences and probably more than that. This is like a chain of dominoes that once you tip the first one over, you're going to change all kinds of things that you aren't foreseeing. But on top of that, I would go back to tie things together even more, that in some sense, if we even grant that this is going to happen and that people will be doing this kind of large scale editing that can afford it and may do it, that is, in another sense, another way of not understanding Odal. Like, if it is, quote unquote, your child to some extent, but you're editing and hacking in different genes that didn't come from you or from your wife, then in some sense, it isn't your child anymore because you're destroying the continuity. It doesn't have the genes that you got from your grandfather. It doesn't have the genes your wife got from her mother. So at that point, you're literally turning the actual human into someone that is actually rootless because he doesn't have genes that came from anyone.
Exactly. It's not a real person. And here's an even scarier idea. It's only going to be a matter of time till artificial intelligence gets involved with that. Picture this: an artificial intelligence unit that takes genes that are like from a cloud and arranges them artificially and synthetically to breed people. To breed people in synthetic wombs. They already have synthetic wombs. They're like breeding lambs and cows and shit in them.
Well, I would add that if we want to go back to the topic that transhumanism is already here and the idea that computers on some sense are breeding humans, if you even look at things like dating sites, in a real sense, like if you met your wife people do it and it works. I'm not hating on it, but there is a real sense wherein if that's how you met your wife, you have been bred by a technological AI algorithm, the same way that we would breed cattle.
Wow, that's scary.
Isn't it?
That's wow. I didn't even think about that. That takes it to the next level. That's terrifying.
It's not an original thought. I actually got that from Dmitry Orlov.
Ah, well.
Interesting author.
Well, today we'll pretend that came from you. So we're going to give you credit for that one. But, either way, it's terrifying because think about this. So when the AI gets involved with, selecting genes, how does the selfish gene work? Selfish gene, whenever it has an advantage, it wipes out all the other stuff and it contours and habituates to its environment, right? Machines do the same thing. Artificial intelligence does the same thing. It creates everything and it improves everything so that it will be more efficient. So it will be better than the last time, and it eliminates anything that's unnecessary, eliminates anything that's not needed, eliminates anything that slows down the process. What is the AI unit when it gets involved with arranging genes? What's it going to do? Is it going to keep people like... Is it going to let people have their anger and their love and their passion? Is it going to keep people's talent for making music? Is it going to keep people, or is it eventually just going to start breeding sexless, hairless, just like these like mole people that serve the machine?
I think that that's what it would desire to do, but again, I fundamentally have come to believe that the project of the people that want this is not going to succeed because, to go back to our topic from last week, to some extent, things are going to fall apart. Maybe not within our lifetimes, but definitely within our children's lifetimes. So this stuff can only progress so far before it will eat itself, basically. And I would say that as people who care about our heritage, who care about Odal, who care about our gods, our ancestors, and being real folk, that we just need to endure and tough out the storm, largely. And that means that we need to do the opposite of what the system and this technology, or if it's AI, or if it's vampires, whoever it is. We need to do the opposite of what they want us to do. We need to make real communities that have a real place, that have rootedness. We need to learn real skills. We need to teach our children real skills. And we need to recover the Odal that we haven't inherited.
Yeah. This kind of goes into my theory, which I call Fabian folk futurism. And people that don't watch my stuff, get into, you know, all of my theories and stuff, I'll give you guys a quick synopsis of what Fabian folk futurism is. It's exactly what Griff's talking about. Here's the bottom line. Here's the truth about transhumanism and AI and automation and gene editing and all this, like, really scary stuff we're talking about. Is it's not just scary stuff. It's not just a conspiracy theory. This is stuff that's going to happen. This is going to happen. Get it in your mind. It's not a sci-fi movie. This stuff is here. The beginnings of this stuff is here. We will see it start to happen within our lifetimes. So as Mr. Griff said, we need to do the opposite. This is why I talk about building communities. This is why I talk about having kids in traditional families. And this is also, more importantly, why I talk so hard about folk economy. Because we need to go our own way, 100%. Fabian folk futurism. Yes, automation will be here. Yes, AI will be here. Yes, these things are already here and they're going to be our future. But we can use them to our advantage. We can break off from the collapsing thing. We can break off from the runaway train, go our own way, establish our own communities, and build in a way that is better for our children, which is use automation, use artificial intelligence, use these things in a way that is beneficial and prosperous so that we may reestablish Odal. Because I do 100% believe that it's not just a dystopian nightmare waiting to happen. This isn't the end of the world. In fact, if we play our cards right, and if the gods are willing, we can use this to our advantage to build a future that is better than we've ever seen before. I believe that.
Well, as I've kind of alluded to before, I think that another thing we need to remind ourselves is that we have to live and face the situation we're in. And so, yeah, okay, ideally we wouldn't have and rely upon things like computers and smartphones and things. And we should try to be conscious of how we use them and not become dependent on Google Maps or things and let ourselves wither. You know, the same way you wouldn't want to turn yourself into riding around on a Walmart scooter if you're perfectly capable of walking, because it means your legs are going to wither away. So we need to look at technology as something that we harness and use to the best of our ability and to help us do things, and to tie it into the idea of being folkish and things like that. You know, there are lots of people who are able to and will take advantage of things like the ability to remote work, and that will allow them to, you know, make maybe a folkstead and settle somewhere rural that they couldn't have if we didn't have that technology.
Okay.
So there is some sense where you are riding the tiger, I guess, to steal a euphemism.
14 Reasons in the chat mentioned something. I actually want to respond to this. He says, pushing the message, it will happen later.
I agree with his idea of the time frame. I was just being conservative with it. And, I don't know. As I said before, we're looking at something of incredible complexity. I personally do believe and think that it will collapse within about the same time frame he's talking about, 20 years or so. I think that that is probably about correct.
He's talking about something different. He's talking about an economic social collapse. We're talking about transhumanism.
No, I mean the same thing. I'm saying that, you know, a lot of these things, they will, you know, for the next 20 years or however long until things do collapse, you know, those things are going to progress and get worse and make life more of a living hell. But I do believe that things are going to collapse in about that same time frame. And as I said, we need to, you know, we need to weather the storm, and we need to create something during it as well. We can't just sit, you know, we don't need to just sit in rooms and do an alienated liberal individualist lifestyle. We need to actually be building something that will live after that storm.
So, and this is with what he's talking about. I think he kind of maybe I misunderstanding. I only got a chance to read. I think he's misunderstanding what I'm saying. Is that that we should just like sit back and wait for it, which is, you know, the opposite of what I'm saying. In fact, dude, I've already started working. I'm already working towards this. I mean, I'm already working towards this solution. I encourage people to get out and get to work now. We have to get to work now. We need our own economy. We need our own infrastructure. We need to reestablish our odal. We need to get our spirituality back. We need our morality back. We need to rebuild now. Now, now, now. There is no tomorrow. And the timelines, here's, this is all speculation. None of us know. None of us know.
Well, that's exactly, that was my point. You know, that's my belief.
It could be tomorrow. It could be tomorrow, or it could be in 50 years. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I don't have time for speculation. Let's get started now. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, exactly. We need to actually be building things. It will happen when it happens. We can't change when it's going to happen. We need to face the world as it is.
Yeah.
And we need to act.
Absolutely. So get out into your local communities. Get out, start building. Get out and, you know, get stuff going. Hang on, let me make sure I'm believing. Okay, I'm sorry, 14. I misunderstood your comment there, but that's okay. It's all good. But this is this trans, whether it's transhumanism, whether it's an economic collapse, like we were talking about last week, whether we don't know what's coming. I mean, we have an idea. Okay, so we could see a few monsters in the distance. They're coming fast. We don't know which one's going to get here first. We don't know what they're going to look like. We don't know what they're going to throw at us. We don't know. What we do need to do is establish our own communities. We need to establish our own independence, our sovereignty, and we need to start establishing plans so that we can be competitive, we can defend ourselves, and so that we can have a better future. Because there's just, it's just, that's what it is. And that's what my technique, I know I had a video about primitivism versus accelerationism and how I'm kind of like a third position from those things. Fabian folk futurism is about a war of attrition against the vampires and building our own communities to compete with them. So, you know, that's my theory. That's the way that I believe that we should go forward, and that's the way that I believe that the Ossetruan folk community should go forward. Since we're not, I don't want to get too edgy here, but you guys know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to disagree with in that, really.
So it's just think about this. Think about this. When it comes to Fabian folk futurism, think about our grandkids or our great grandkids having sovereign territory, with having, you know, farms that are automated, having, you know, all of this stuff, having their, you know, their own, our own state. Essentially.
I will say that I think we're in the same sphere, but I fall more to a primitivist sort of. I don't think that automation will last. I don't think we'll have automated farms. Sorry, Dave.
Well, you don't. How are we not going to have automated farms?
Mostly it comes back to peak oil, but that's another rabbit hole I don't think we have time for tonight, nor do I have the notes prepped.
Yeah, this is a pretty big topic. I've done like multi-hour shows talking about this here, which is it's a very fascinating topic, and it's always something to tingle your brain with. And as everybody knows here on the Bog, me and Griff are big fans of working to perfect the pursuit of the mind and perfect our mastery of self and mastery of our intelligence. And I'm ferocious when it comes to trying to find knowledge and trying to understand things. And that's one of the areas that I really like to look into, because it's a very stark reality. It's something that, you know, people should learn about. There's nothing you shouldn't at least learn about. There's no barriers when it comes to the quest for wisdom. And, you know, if you read the Eddas, you know that the Allfather himself is also thirsty for knowledge. Yeah, that's he goes to the depths. He goes to the furthest reaches of the world to learn new things.
Yeah, absolutely the case. Although I would also add that It's definitely a niche thing for a certain type of person that has that burning need for knowledge. As Hovemal says, it's best for most people to not be overwise, you know.
Yeah, don't be overwise, cunning, or clever. For what does it say? It's best to be middle wise, not over cunning or clever. For all will know what an oaf he is when he sits at feast with a sage, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is pretty much saying that, it's best to be, middle wise. Be in the middle. Don't run your mouth too much, because if you're the kind of guy that runs your mouth too much, when you sit down with somebody that's actually a really big brain, you're looking like a real goofball when they reveal their power level in front of everybody. You don't want that. So it's always good to, here's one thing that I've learned. Most you will find wisdom from sources that you would least expect. So when I'm talking to somebody new, a lot of times I'll just listen to what they have to say. I do it in real life. I don't, I mean, I'm a motor mouth all the time, but in real life, I talk on the mic so much. I talk on the phone so much. I do so much talking that in real life, a lot of times it's really nice to just be able to listen to somebody that has something good to say. And there's so many people out there that you would least expect that have something really profound that you can learn from, even if they don't know it. It's really cool. So anyway, we're going to wrap it up this evening. Mr. Griff, do you have anything in closing remarks?
Not really, although other than to just add again that we need to get out, we need to build communities, we need to make, whether you make the connections face to face or online, you need to make, in the end, if you meet some people online and stuff, you need to make it happen in real life and build something.
Yeah, speaking of that, in the description, I have links to both the Nirvana Society as well as the Ossetru Folk Assembly. Both of them are my two favorite organizations out there. The if you are Nirvana Society is looking for graphic designers. We're looking for people that could do animations, people that could do artwork, people that could do all that stuff. If you're a talented, folk-minded man and you want to get into contributing to, in my opinion, the best folkish academic organization in the world, these guys, I'm telling you, if you want to contribute, these guys have the biggest brains. I mean, I'm a pretty smart guy. When I get into listening to the chats of these guys and the amount of knowledge and wisdom and the study that these guys, you got guys in there have spent 30, 40 years studying this stuff, and they really need a lot of help in the area of aesthetics, of artwork, and stuff like that. So if you are somebody like that, go check out Nirvana Society, sign up, reach out to Mr. Mark Pereer or some of our membership coordinators, and they'll get you in. We can get you talking and stuff like that. But if you're somebody that's looking for a real life community and you're looking for, somebody to go practice with and somebody that's folk minded like us, woke, folk pilled, good people, the Ossetru Folk Assembly is the biggest and the best. There's folk builders in every state. There's communities in every state. I just joined finally. And hail to the AFA, hail to Nirvana Society. Links are in the description. You're absolutely gonna love them. Get off your butts, get off your butt cheeks. Go out and get into the community in real life. You will not regret it. I guarantee you it'll be one of the most fulfilling things you've ever done in your entire life. I promise you. It's great. Great people. Wonderful people. So get out, do stuff in real life. Be a doer. As I said in my video the other day, be a doer. Become a doer. Go out and do. Nirvana Society and the Ossetru Folk Assembly, which was founded by our guy here on Hrafn Folk Network, Mr. Stephen McNallan. Stephen McNallan. He's been doing this for what do you say? He's been following the path of Odin for 50 years or something like that.
I think it was 50.
Yeah, it's almost two of my lifetimes. That's incredible. Incredible man. Incredible man. So, I know a lot of people are out there looking for leadership. They're out there looking for guys that are like them, like-minded like them. Let me tell you something, Mr. Stephen McNallan, Mr. Mark Pereer, these guys are the real, real deal. Stephen McNallan went and he traveled the world as a mercenary, trying to save elephants from poachers, went to South Africa to try to fight there. He went and he fought communists to save Tibet. Like he's dedicated his life to the folk and to other folks around the world that have similar struggles. And he's just an awesome, tremendous guy. The proof is in the pudding with his work. So these guys are real life, man. Real leaders are walking around existing today. You just got to go give them a shout. Ossetru Folk Assembly, Nirvana Society, here Hrafn Folk. like, subscribe, share. If you like this stream, make sure you share it out. Share it with your friends. Help us beat the YouTube algorithms. So give us a like. Everybody bog that like button and go nuts with it. I want to see maximum likes on this video and every video so we can get to as many eyes and ears as possible. This is a work of love. This is a work of passion. This is a work that is dedicated to our folk and our gods. So, like always, everybody, make sure to, oh yeah, let me give a shout to some of my homies real quick. Traditional Apothecary, you know, beard oil, lotion, you know, shampoo, conditioner, all of it. It's so great. Stop buying from the vampires. Stop giving the people that hate your guts and sell you poison money. Support your folk, man. Support folk economy. This is some of the best stuff I ever get. Trust me, Big Dave doesn't shill for things that he doesn't love and doesn't think are great products. This is the best damn stuff. I swear by it. I use it. My wife uses it. My mom uses it. My Dr. G and his wife use it. So many people message me. They're like, you know, people are like, oh, man, I was kind of weary about the traditional apothecary. I picked it up. It's really great stuff. Dude, I told you. It's made. How could it not be? It's literally made out of organic stuff, all natural, no garbage, no chemicals, no synthetics, no plastics. Real deal. Keep your white bright. Keep your mane flowing and keep your beard robust like Big Dave does. Just go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Type in promo code Dave to get 10% off. I have it right in the description there. Do good business with good people. Support folk economy. And speaking of, check out my drinking horn. I just got this from Brother Rob Stam, the folkish cop. He is his story, a lot of people are really familiar with his story. Tremendous guy, war hero, veteran. He was a police officer. He's a father, practicer of the old ways, member of the Ostru Folk Assembly, which he's now a folk builder. So he's an apprentice folk builder. Wonderful, excellent guy. Lost his job. I think it was the SPLC put out a smear piece on him because he practices Ossetru. Fuck them. We support Brother Rob. So go pick up a horn from him. Find him on Facebook. I don't know if he's got a website yet. I know he has an Etsy. Maybe he has it. He got rid of it. I know he's building up his website now, but go give him a shout on Facebook. Rob Stam, STAMM. Show him some love, man. He's such a wonderful guy. Does so much cool stuff. Leather work. Drinking horns. Look at this thing. Look at this bad boy. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. It's tremendously priced. Custom design. There's the symbol of my kindred, Penfolk, with the Allomatic sun wheel inside of the Pennsylvania Keystone. There's the beeswax liner. I'm telling you, this is really great stuff. Really great stuff. So if you have a folkish business and you're trying to get off the ground, hit up Big Dave, man. You can find me on Telegram. I have a really cool Telegram group. Reach out to me. We'll get you in there if you're interested in that. But anyways, that's it for tonight, guys. Hail the gods. Hail the folk. Hail Hrafenfolk. I love you guys, man. I'll see you guys very soon. Hail.